Conversation about the capital restoration, I guess you'd call it. I'm sorry that of our 25 members, we've got seven here, but I've always said if you want to have influence on the Capital Investment Committee, you need to show up.
We get our projects.
I'm never good.
Sounds good to me, Mr.
Somebody if Leroy Storm can make it from Plumber.
That's true.
The St. Paul and Minneapolis delegation can make it when they can fall out of bed and crawl over it.
Well, Senator Pappas did.
Let's see if I can.
That's exactly what I did this morning.
Northwest suburb.
We are going to be taking a tour after the presentations. Hopefully there will be more people here at that time. So at this time, Dana, how do you pronounce it? Badgero? Commissioner of Administration, if I pronounce it wrong, you correct me here.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you pronounced it exactly right. My name is Dana Badgero, and I'm the Commissioner of Administration. And I have here with me Michael Bjornberg, but let me just, by way of introduction, say that in last year's bonding bill, you gave us an additional $1 million to continue with the schematic design for the interior restoration of the Capitol. And that work has been going on then for just over a year. We had held a national competition to find a design team, and we hired Hamel Green and Abramson from here in the Twin Cities, but they're partnered with a nationally known capital renovation firm, Schooley Caldwell, from Ohio, who are currently working on a number of state capitals. So this presentation this morning is to update the committee on the work of the schematic design, to talk about the need for the renovation, and then to get into the details of project implementation. Project description this morning will be from our architect-in-chief here, Michael Bjornberg, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
My name is Michael Bjornberg, Chairman Langseth, members of the committee. I'm excited to be here today and show you what we've been working on with the state capitol. So with that, here's the agenda for the presentation. Feel free to ask questions if you have any when they come up. I'm told to bring the mic closer. I'm going to go through some historical background quickly, project description as we saw it, existing building issues, benchmarking other capital projects. We're going to look at the design concept and then talk about implementation. This is Cass Gilbert's sketch, 1896 for the Minnesota State Capitol. It was completed in 1905, built at a cost of $4.5 million, which is pretty phenomenal. Today's replacement price would be priceless. The legislature in Cass Gilbert decided this would be the most modern state-of-the-art building in the state of Minnesota. It was the first building in Minnesota to be fully electrified. It had elevators, it had telephones, it had fireproof construction, and it had, which was unique at the time, a freestanding power plant also for safety. So it was a pretty incredible building. Also, it was meant to be a building that showed permanence. Minnesota was an emerging state at that time and wanted to show Minnesota had legs. Progress, wanted to show Minnesota was a land of progress, moving forward. And then also national prominence. The Minnesota Capitol today is considered one of the top state capitals in the nation. It's also proven to be a player in national politics. So here we have it today. It seemed very similar to today. Built out of Georgian marble, 100 years old, incredibly beautiful building from the outside, but some ails on the inside. So we started the project, interior restoration of the Minnesota State Capitol. And you walk in the building, and this is what you see, and you go, you feel puzzled because, well, what is it we need to do? Building looks gorgeous. Cass Gilbert's design was incredible. That blend of art and architecture with the use of stones from around the world gives us an incredible building. But behind those walls are where we found the problems. The infrastructure of this building, a lot of it dates back to original 100-year-old construction, and the mechanical systems are at the end of their lifespan. They're a good 40 years old. So we have systematic failure inside the building skin. Once that stuff impacts this, then we have real issues. The other thing we found as we got into it is there needed to be a strategy, a plan for implementation of the restoration. How do we go from one part of the building to the other and do that while the building stays in operation? And we heard it over and over as we talked to people early on. People want to remain in the building through session and conduct the business of government. That's no easy task. So these are the primary issues we discovered early on. Aging mechanical systems, energy inefficient systems, non-code compliant systems. We have no enclosed stairs in the building. We have inadequate life safety systems, smoke warning, fire warning systems. We have heating, venting, and air conditioning that does not meet modern code. We have outdated communication and technology systems. I'll show you some photographs of some of these things, and this will be part of what we'll look at in the tour as well. Inadequate life safety systems, outdated security systems. Much has changed in the last 5-6 years in how we deal with security. We've gone from apprehension to a state of mitigation. Lack of visitor services and amenities. All you really see in this building for visitor services are one visitor desk on the main floor here. We have building accessibility issues. These old historic buildings have issues of stairways and accessibility to things like the chambers and restrooms. We have very few restrooms that are actually accessible. Physical deterioration and damage. We have lots of moisture damage in this building, and you'll see some of that. I noticed as I was waiting right outside here in the hallway, this ceiling also is showing moisture damage. So it's throughout the building, and we'll talk about that more. And then lack of adequate hearing rooms. And this hearing room is a good example, and I'll talk about that more further. So the mechanical systems. These are some shots from places you'll see on the tour. It shows you the condition, the infrastructure of this building. Top left is right up in here. Whoops. Up here is a room we'll go into. It's got the main fire pump, and the main electrical service comes into the building in this area. Fire control panels are back in here. You climb up over the fire pump to get back to them. There really is not insufficient. There's insufficient emergency lighting in this room as well. So it's an interesting room, and that's the backbone of the building. Here's the communication and technology systems. I believe this is Senate Media Board right here. But you'll see this a lot in those lower rooms. So you can imagine trying to get in and sort through some of this stuff and understand what's going on. We've got rooms like this where it's pretty hard to get at and maintain, as well as this. We have 28 individual air handling units in the basement of this building, all of those very difficult to get at and maintain. Now, this is a picture, as Commissioner Badgerow said, our partner Schooley Caldwell working on three state capitals. I'll show you some shots from Kansas because it's a very similar building. This is the new mechanical rooms in the Kansas state capitol. This shows you what mechanical rooms need to be like now. The air volume is greater, need for access and maintenance to the systems. And then here it shows coming down into the existing building. These new vaults are built outside of the building, concrete structures, safe, secure, and in the kind of spaces they need to be. This is what we'd like to move forward to. So life safety and security. An interesting one, 100 years ago when Cass Gilbert did this building, all his fresh air intakes are outside the building on the ground. There was not parking in those areas at the time, and it was fairly safe. These days, having a loading dock and cars parked right by the air intakes throughout this building, most people can tell when there's a truck at the loading dock. They can smell it. It does pollute the building in that sense, as well as security issues with it. So we're looking at better ways to do that. We're also looking at better ways to do the loading dock. Vehicle proximity and access. Like I said, when the building was done 100 years ago, we didn't have all these vehicles around the building we have now. Some of these were temporary solutions that have become fairly permanent. We also have vans that can come and go through the Port Cashier and park there. Pretty much unquestioned. Again, apprehension versus mitigation. If we look at mitigation, we look at moving these things away. Here's the state capitol tunnel we're all familiar with. The basement is an interesting area on itself. That's where we'll focus on our tour. But you can see all the communication systems that are up here in the ceiling. Those are fairly vulnerable. Also, here's our corridor systems with storage and ductwork in them. That can be done differently. Physical deterioration damage. This is fairly common. You'll see some of this damage, moisture damage up in the upper floor, but you see it on the lower floors as well. This is down in the basement, where you typically will get water down in the basement on any given day. Some of that is rainwater. Some of it's from the original pipes in the walls of the building that leak throughout it. Some of it's clear. Some of it's brown water. So we're getting a lot of moisture infiltration in the building. Moisture infiltration is a number one enemy of an old historic building. And then we have deterioration, just general deterioration across the area of the building. Now, what you find is since the mid-'80s, 70% of the money towards this building has been quick emergency fixes. Not fixing the source of the problem, but say just come in, fix this piece of pavement without really understanding what's causing that underneath. That's where we need to get. We need to start to understand what deterioration is and address those issues. Visitor services and amenities. Probably the most public building in the state. visited by over 300,000 people a year, and this is the visitor accommodations as you come into this building. A desk on that main floor. We get busloads of kids who come in, flood into the rotunda. There's really no restrooms for them. There's no place for a classroom. There's no way to really deal with those with the visitors in what is considered one of the top state capitals in the nation. This can be addressed differently. There was an incident a while ago where a visitor came in with a machete, went to this desk, and asked to see the governor.
Okay. Did they tell him where he was?
I think they told him where to go, yeah. So, you know, they're volunteer tour guides. They're really not dressed to handle that situation. If you look pre-9/11, it was an idea, much like you see in the nightly news, where here's somebody who did something. Does anybody know this person? That's apprehension. Mitigation is you try to avoid that situation to begin with. So we're looking at ways to help do that. And accessibility. This building is far from meeting current code, and I know the state requires all new construction to meet code. We have a building that is not accessible. We have a building that does not have restrooms on every floor and does not have enclosed fire stairs. So accessibility is one of them we need to look at, particularly in the chamber areas and the restrooms. And then hearing rooms. It's got inadequate hearing rooms. A lot of them are the layout. This is a classic layout of the hearing rooms. We've got the columns. We've got these rooms in the corner. G15 here, largest hearing room, multiple columns in it. We're looking at ways to take these hearing rooms and make them better adapted. Take out the columns, take out those corner rooms. As we were hooking up the laptop this morning, we found the only source of power is over on that side of the room. There needs to be sources of power throughout the room for these hearing rooms. So a better way for the public to come in and participate in government. So we have a building as we look ahead. It was identified in 2001 pre-design and confirmed in our 2006 update. A building that requires updates, requires additional restrooms, requires additional exit stairs and mechanical systems. So we're short of space in this building. And then how to address that. It's a historic building, national significant building. So we look to the National Park Service's guidelines. And you only add to a building when it's confirmed that you need to do so. This building does need that. There's three ways to approach that. First way is an exterior addition. This building would not lend itself well to a wing on the building. But there have been exterior additions if you consider freestanding of buildings. The state office building, judicial building have been exterior additions. One of the 2001 recommendations was to build another building, office building, north of this one. But we found there really is no appetite to build another state office building. So that really isn't an option. The other way is found space, we call it. Now, found space, I would describe as space that exists and is being used in a different way but can be better utilized. One example would be the Rathskeller kitchen. The north stair, the space is there but wasn't utilized before. There was a kitchen built underneath the north stair. They found the space to put it there. It has no visual impact on the exterior of the building. Very clever solution, very workable. There is much more found space in this building we find to utilize. The whole basement level we see as an opportunity for found space. Even the south stair, if you look at what happened under the north stair, the south stair offers an opportunity for found space as well. So that's one we focused heavily on. And the other one is underground space. And you'll see this on a lot of state capitals across the nation. They're all about that same age, all about dealing with the same issues, need for additional space. So we've looked at a modest underground addition to the south of the building as well as underground mechanical areas to the north of the building, and I'll show you those to you later. So those are the three options. We've focused on the latter two. We've also benchmarked. We've looked at other buildings that are capitals around the country, and I'll just show you a couple of them for an example. The United States Capitol was a series of additions, exterior additions. The dome was an addition. It was a very small building originally. They're currently undergoing a visitor center expansion underground, about a $660 million addition to address the visitors. So you've got great halls, cafeterias, expansion space for the House and Senate. And then these are done typically out in front of the building with a modest at-grade entrance to the building. So, you know, just modest entrances into the building, quite understated. Virginia State Capitol, Thomas Jefferson Building, about half the size of our building, currently undergoing their expansion as well. It's about $150 million project. Very historic building. It's had these two are wings to the original Temple on the Hill. Very difficult, again, to do an exterior addition. So what they've done is looked at an underground addition out in front of the building, and again, a modest entrance at grade for all the visitors to come into. and then you move through those visitor services into the building itself. In Kansas, our partners, Schooley Caldwell, are currently working on the Kansas State House. Kansas State House offers a lot of examples for us to look at for benchmarking. It's a very similar building. It's being done in phase and occupied while it's functioning. So the initial phase is this wing over here. That's complete. They are now working on the center portion of the building, and then this portion is their finishing design work. So I'll show you some of the things they've done. This is a quick diagram. The existing Capitol is right in here. They've added mechanical vaults in the corners underground, which allow them to pull the mechanical equipment out of the building, put it in the better spaces, which was that slide I showed you earlier. And they've also done an underground expansion out in front of the building that has a loading dock, cafeterias, visitor services. So a rather clever approach to it. This is an early sketch showing you the addition impact right out in front here. This is the main entrance, loading dock over here. You can see a school bus ready to drop people off. You can still move up this stairway onto that main historic plaza. And then the shot below shows you as they're getting ready to put stone on the front. And that brings us to our building. As we looked at this building, we looked at the issues, and we looked at the amount of infrastructure that really needs to be dealt with on this building. We thought it'd be best to look at a comprehensive approach that looks forward to the next 100 years on this building. And then what are those solutions? So I talked about before how we talked about doing found space and an underground expansion. This is a site plan. It shows the existing building, Aurora Avenue, and then the two parking lots north of the building. We're looking at putting the stuff back behind the building, underground, grassing it over, and we're looking at a modest underground expansion right at, under the hill in front of the building. We're looking at utilizing the area under the stair, and then taking Aurora Avenue and bending it around, and then new entrances at that point. So I'll show you those in greater detail. This is a series of two plans, the before and after, are proposed in the existing conditions. And I want to point out some of the key pieces here. You also have a plan in your brochures you got of this. I will show you in a larger version. But I want to point out a couple of the key differences. This is existing building, tunnel running through the center of the building. All of these people and stuff packed in here, our mechanical units, our press, our offices, support for the building. We've got security on one end. We've got plant management on another end. Here's the Raskeller in the kitchen under the north stair, and its circuitous route to the tunnel system. What's interesting in these older buildings is the structural systems carry all the way down the ground. So you can start to see right here this round circle. That's a rotunda. That's the foundations of the rotunda, the columns coming down through the building. So similar to what we see on this floor and ground floor occurs on this basement level as well. So down here we show this is what that space can be like. It can be very similar to what you find on the ground and first floors. It can be a very grand space, very elegant. You recall the two metal stairs that take you down in the tunnel. We're looking at opening all this center portion up and creating grand stairs similar to the stairs that are above. So we have a space that's much more similar to the spaces above. The other thing we do that's a bolder move here is we take this tunnel that runs through the center of the building, and we move it south of the building. So we take that bisection of the building and move it outside of the building. We create mechanical vaults north of the building. We create underground parking and underground receiving for goods. So all of that stuff that's in the building now moves outside of the building in a safe, secure vaults. And then we also have a multi-purpose meeting room underneath that front stair. That's about 500 seats. So this becomes our main entrance right in here for visitors. And I'll show you that in greater detail. We also get hearing rooms, three additional hearing rooms down on this floor. So this is a sketch canvas that we're doing very similar to this. This shows you their tunnel being moved outside of the building. You bring natural light down into that tunnel. If you can imagine a tunnel in this building with natural light. This shows you the front of the Capitol building, so you always have a sense of where you are. You're getting borrowed natural light down into spaces and adjacent to it, which creates a much better working environment. We're looking at similar move. This is that plan I was showing you in a larger one. So you can see here's the tunnel running across. The porte cochere above runs right through here for orientation. This is the south stair, current south stair. We would pull the stone off, restructure it, put the stone back in place. We get a meeting room in here. We get a new visitor lobby entry here, restrooms, classroom for students, and historical society offices on the side of that. So this becomes the heart of our visitor entrance to the building. Those kids can all come into the lobby, bounce around for a while, use restrooms, go into a classroom, get oriented, and then move up through the building. Now we have a better access back to dining. We have more student dining. We have restore a couple of the historic dining rooms, which you'll see on your tour, and some private dining spaces, so much more dining. We have mechanical spaces out behind the building. We have VIP parking with secure connection into the building, so that happens underground versus above grade like it does now. Same with receiving for goods, much more secure. We also then have, like I said, two hearing rooms on this side, additional hearing room over here, office space, and then we're looking at press office space over here. These are additional offices as well, with light down through the tunnels and light wells. So that's the notion of what we're doing on that lowest level. This will all then be found space. So a quick section to show you what that is. Here's the found space of the basement. Here's the front stair coming down. Aurora Avenue is right here now. This is that meeting room area. We're looking at a divisible meeting room. We use for large hearings or multiple hearings. Also, can be used for key discussions, talks by dignitaries. We have a level underneath there in the front that's also mechanical space. So we've taken all the mechanical systems out of the building, set it up in new vault spaces, which also then allows us to systematically go through and restore the existing building. This shows you Kansas underneath the stair, an early model, restructuring it, and then here it is as they start to open it up, just raw construction. But the kind of space they found underneath their stair. Here's a sketch, or here's a photo of the tunnel. Could be our tunnel, could be a Kansas tunnel, could be almost any Capitol basement tunnel. You get the wonderful stone walls of the foundation coming down, but you also get all this other stuff. You got a cable tray, storage in the corridors, all of that stuff. This is Kansas, what they did with those tunnels, with those corridors. So anti-space to other offices, much more pleasant. So our strategy. Underground additions, north and south of the Capitol, back here and out in the front where we get additional support for the building. And those are this area and then out in front here. And when we're done, what we're looking at is modern mechanical systems, energy-efficient systems. It's a building with very little energy efficiency. We have code-compliant systems. We have heating, venting, air conditioning up to modern codes. Flexible communication and technology, not only set for today, but able to expand for the future in an easy and convenient way. We have improved life safety systems. We have improved security systems as well. We have more visitor services and amenities. We have better building access accommodations and building accessibility. We address the ongoing building deterioration, and we have adequate hearing rooms. So that's the plan. The plan's easy enough. The difficulty in the past has been, how do you accomplish that? How do you actually implement restoration of a building while it's being occupied and used for government uses? So I'll show you we have three steps that we're advocating for it. First step is the underground construction we talked about. Back behind the north side of the building, we set up the new mechanical infrastructure, we set up secure parking, we set up secure receiving, and then that area is grassed over. And we also do the construction out in front of the building. So we're looking at this starting September 2008, taking 2 years. We have three steps, each take 2 years. First step is the expansion space on the building. Second step is the existing building, and that's two phases. So the second part of it, when we move into the existing building, now we've set up the infrastructure outside the building, which allows us to start plugging in new mechanical systems to the existing building. One of the difficulties of restoring the existing building has been most of the systems run through the existing building. So to be able to do that, take out systems, replace them while you're using a building has been very difficult, if not impossible. This lets that happen a little more conveniently. So we start out with the east wing and the north wing. The large meeting space I talked about lets us accommodate chamber spaces for the interim. So we'll use that initially for House chambers. The Supreme Court said they would stay in their building. They're over here the first week of the month. They would stay in their building through their 2 years. And then we just accommodate the House and the office of these people. So this area then becomes our swing space for that use. That's 2 years, so that's fall 2012. 8 to 10 is the first step. So 10 to 12. And then 12 to 14, fall 2014, is the west wing and the rotunda. And during that time, the Senate chambers is accommodated in this large meeting space, so we set it up for that use. So during the course of all of this, All session can still happen in the building. Everybody that's in the building can remain in the building. And then 2014, right around Christmas, everybody moves in. Here's an early exterior sketch, and what this starts to show is the minimal impact on the front. Here's the light well areas. This is the old Aurora Avenue alignment. Here's the new alignment. People get dropped off, come into the new entrances. They can still go up the stairway and into the rotunda as they typically do now. So minimal impact on exterior of the building and aesthetics, but a major significant impact on the interior of the building.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on, you haven't referenced much on the west side of the Capitol, and I'm wondering why. There's, you know, the space both on ground level and as you move out underneath those steps. Isn't that a fairly large space that could be used?
Yeah, we really didn't need space to the east and the west. Where we saw it plugging in mechanically, electrically, was north and south. I'm not. You're talking about underground space to the west.
What are the steps on the west?
Yeah, the west side is primarily our security and VIP parking access. So we'd access that off of the west side. But in terms of an underground expansion that way, we really didn't. It really didn't seem to work out that way to bring stuff in through security.
I think the only thing we use that west space for right now is that annual potluck lunch that they have.
Great hall space.
But I mean, as you go west, there's a
found yeah. space, not underground, found space.
And once you get underneath the street, you got the whole area in front of the state office building. Maybe that'll be in 100 years from now, they'll do that.
The next chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
I'll probably still be chair then. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bjornberg, I've been on committees like this long enough to remember it wasn't all that many years ago. We were redoing some electrical and mechanical systems, and we thought we had updated those systems except for this east wing. And I can also recall that we have restored the House chamber and the Senate chamber over the last not too distant future. Are you saying that all of the mechanical systems need to be replaced and modernized, so to speak, in the Capitol are only the ones for the east wing? And why would we go back into the House and the Senate chambers so soon after we have just restored them at a considerable expense, as I recall.
20 years.
Chairman Langseth, Senator Frederickson, as we've looked at the building, I'll try to address those individually. House chambers. House chambers had a significant restoration. A lot of that was a fairly cosmetic restoration. It really didn't address the systems behind the walls, which would be we have 100-year-old drain pipes coming down through those walls. Those are cracked. Those need to be taken apart and addressed. So largely the cosmetic portion of the House chamber would remain intact. We'd want to make sure we have the communication and technology infrastructure to handle anything, not only next 5 years, but out further. So, and the other thing we looked at is in the House chambers, there's a lot of recessed can lights that are not energy efficient. A better way to address the energy uses in those chambers. So that would be one of them. So we're not looking at a full-scale cosmetic change in the House. The other one, electrical infrastructure. The electrical infrastructure has been upgraded, and that for the most part is great. We're piggybacking off of the electrical vaults for new mechanical vaults. But once you get inside the building, part of that infrastructure upgrade, things were put where there was place to put them. They may not be in the best places, but the backbone of that system we can utilize.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bjornberg, one other question about moving Aurora Avenue towards the mall and away from the Capitol. Wouldn't that detract from the appearance of the mall? And there are historical monuments out just to the south of the current Aurora. What would that do with the appearance of the mall and the historic setting on the mall?
Chairman Langseth and Senator Frederickson, we've tried to be very mindful of what Cass Gilbert's visions were. We've done quite a bit of research on Cass Gilbert's original intents on the landscape, and particularly the Capitol Mall. By moving Aurora Avenue, well, it's interesting. Aurora Avenue is originally a carriageway. Since then, it's become sort of a parking lot, as you might say, as well as a roadway. We're looking at diminishing the impact of the vehicles there, or allow some minimal parking there, but make that more of a pedestrian way. We're just moving down to where these stairs are right now. We have the same curb cuts. We do not impact any existing monuments that are out there. We weave our way through what's already there.
Okay, Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dornberg, as I recall, about 30 years back, there was a plan to take and dig up the mall and put parking in there and then close that back down. And my understanding of that, downfall to that at least, was that there was a high level of water going through there, and so it wasn't feasible. Can you tell me what the status of that is? Is that under consideration in any way? And does the water still cause a problem?
Chairman Langseth, Senator Foley, I think the two questions I've been asked the most have been water and parking. So you've got the water one. The water that's exists on the Capitol Mall, and it does exist in two places, has impacted the judicial building on the east side and transportation on the west side, largely below the knoll of this hill. The territorial competition you refer to was a 400,000 square foot expansion that pretty much consumed the entire mall. We're not going out that far. We've looked back at all the soil borings from that competition. The areas we're looking at expanding on are prime soil, and we're not getting into those areas. We're going to verify all that information, but we've relied a lot of that, looked at a lot of that historical information. The area we're talking about, the soils are great.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, I had one other question I wanted to ask. Earlier on in your presentation, you talked about some of the inside renovation and the removal of a number of columns, and you showed, I believe, room 15 downstairs, and, you know, with the different columns going all the way around the room. It sounded as if you were talking about removing all those columns, and my question is, you know, I don't know if they're structural columns or not, but I don't know how you'd remove those without actually changing the complexion of that space from its existing use. Here, I'm not sure. I suppose these columns could be, you know, you could figure out a way to maybe put some kind of a support across and then remove the columns here. But I could you address that?
Yes. Chairman Langseth, Senator Stumpf. The rotunda space, we want that to stay the same as it does on the other floors. That is structural. There is no reason to remove those. That becomes a public exhibit space. These are the columns that I'm referring to, particularly this room exactly. And those, if there's a will, there's a way to do it. We've looked at how that is, particularly if we're taking them out vertically. We can carry it up above, and then we're not worried about them below. We've looked at what that structural implications are that are for that, and that's what we're planning to explore further. So these hearing rooms would be opened up, be better layout hearing rooms. But the rotunda space, we're trying to not only keep that the way it is, we're trying to celebrate what is down there.
Mr. Chairman.
A number of years ago, we were doing a lot of this underground stuff, and Fort Snelling Underground Visitor Center, obviously that had some very, very smart people doing that, and now they want to abandon that and go above ground because of all the moisture and everything. How can we be sure as legislators that the stupidity at that time isn't being promoted today?
Chairman Langseth, I think we do more research these days, and certainly the 70s when underground construction was a rage, it was pretty new. People didn't understand what happens with groundwater, particularly at Fort Snelling, where we've learned when you have a lot of underground springs and you have a river and you have water motivated to get to the river, it's going to do that. We don't have those same geological conditions on this hill that you do on the River Bluff at Fort Snelling. So we've learned to do our homework before we put something underground now.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bjornberg, I was going to ask the parking question, so I still will. I'm presuming that members and staff would no longer be parking out in front where on the drawing that you actually have up on the screen. But I'm not sure that we would be called VIPs. So I'm wondering if staff and members are slated for that. And then is there any acknowledgement and planning going on here for the sore lack of places for the public to park? You know, that's just really traumatic. I had somebody last week who was 45 minutes late for an appointment on Friday, freezing, and had to park so far away because she'd gotten a ticket in Mora, I think. Was that your district, Senator Jungbauer? Anyway, she was really nervous about what happened to her the day before, and so she was absolutely determined not to get a ticket here and was like 45 minutes late and had to walk 5 or 6 blocks. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't catch anything here. Would you talk about that, please?
Mr. Chair, if I might, and Senator Scheid, there are 183 people currently parking on the Capitol grounds, both to the south and the north. All of those would be displaced with this design. During the period of construction through 2014, we would accommodate all 183 in the administration ramp just to the north, which is almost connected by tunnel. And we would displace people from the administration ramp, probably myself included, to accommodate those who need to get to the Capitol. But what we owe the legislature and what my commitment, I couldn't agree more that the availability or lack of public parking in the Capitol complex is deplorable. We have to come up with a better solution for public parking. We've spent quite a bit of time worried about employee parking, and we're here last year, in fact, getting some money to expand parking for employees given the new buildings in the complex. But we've kind of given the citizens second shrift. And so it is my commitment during this second Pawlenty term to come back to the legislature with a more comprehensive parking plan, which would take into account the need for senatorial parking, of course, as well as additional employee parking if needed. But more importantly, will be primarily dedicated toward the need for public parking. Now, there are a couple of factors that influence that, one of which, of course, is Central Corridor. Central Corridor intended to come right down University Avenue with a couple of stops here relatively close to the Capitol. We need to understand more about the implications of Central Corridor, and that has to be a part of our plan as well. So my commitment to you, it never was within the scope of this interior renovation project for the Capitol to deal with parking either public or senatorial or staff. But what we owe it to you, and it is all part of the total renovation of the Capitol area that I think this will dictate. If we're asking more visitors to come and providing more accommodations for them, we necessarily have to provide places where they can park.
Mr. Chairman?
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I take it then that the senators are not the VIPs.
Senator Langseth, Senator Scheid, it will accommodate about a dozen spaces, and we're not attempting to suggest who might be entitled to those dozen. But I think the leaders and so forth and the constitutional officers can sort that out amongst themselves.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Foley?
Yeah, having just gone through Dallas and riding the shuttles around the airport there, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to have a shuttle service in and around the Capitol here and downtown, because we've got a lot of office buildings in the downtown area. And people, I know I walk over to the Elmer Anderson building for meetings of the Mental Health Committee that I happen to be on. And that seems to me as a solution, either put an underground railroad, if you will, or above ground, if you can make it aesthetically pleasing, I guess.
Mr. Chair and Senator Foley, it's just a fabulous question and very interesting, because within the last week I sent to my staff a press release from the state of Iowa, which had just implemented visitor parking with a trolley or a shuttle. So it's certainly something that we can look at and needs to be part of our total plan. We have in the past looked at shuttles, and in fact we currently use a shuttle between the Elmer Anderson building and the Lafayette buildings, the DHS facilities over there. That's paid for by our landlord on the Lafayette property. But so clearly we know how to do that. It's just a case of finding the right economic model and making it part of our total plan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Can I assume that the redesign of the committee rooms gets rid of these 1970s screens and puts in modern stuff and so everybody can see it and not just take out the pillars?
Screens that come from
Chairman Langseth, Senator Tomasoni. Yes. Yes, we want to comprehensively look at. We're also going to look at layout opportunities. And like I said, stringing a cord across like this, there should be outlets in different areas of the room, so it'd be a much more flexible room. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of the exciting parts is how do we make this building more accessible for the public to come and watch how government happens and then become future politicians as well.
Okay. You wish to say something?
Mr. Chair, Paul Mandel with the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. Your questions were all very well answered, so I don't have anything to add at this point other than to thank this committee. As you know, last year, the money we got, I think, was due in large part to the work of the chair and this committee, and that enabled our design to get to the place where it is today. So we continue to work with the Department of Administration and with the Minnesota Historical Society on this fine building. So,
okay, we are going to be taking a tour. The architect's office is going to be conducting the tour. I'd just like to make a couple of comments. The first phase, as we've understood, is $130 million. We obviously can't do that with bonding this year with our restraints. We do have quite a bit of one-time money. The way I see this happening, if it happens, is $130 million one-time money. Now, this particular committee can't just grab one-time money. Obviously, that has to be a more global agreement. But I think the pitch being made from this committee should be on the different things that we want done with one-time money. And obviously, we'll have to compete with it with other committees as well. But I do not want to be taking $130 million out of next year's bonding bill either, because that would just really push aside on a lot of high priority items. So it appears to me that if we're going to do this and get it on schedule, it has to be $130 million one-time money. And that's the pitch I'm going to be making to the majority leader and the chairman of finance and so on. And so that is my plan. And there will be some other requests as well, and we'll get into that later. But I'd like to have all you who possibly can go on the tour now. I thought if we could have 25 people go on the tour, we'd get 40% of the Senate. But they will be conducting it at this point, and I guess we just follow them. Okay?
Are we coming back here?
Okay, so what's that?
Let's see, are we coming back here?
Well, there isn't any particular reason to, I don't believe, unless you want to make some wrap-up comments afterwards.
Chairman Langseth, what I'd just like to say a few things about the tour. You can come back for your stuff if you want to here. Typically, we can find as we come back up through the south stair, we're down in that low level, I can answer questions there. If you'd like to come back up here to answer questions, we can do that too. I'd like to break the group into two groups. I have three people over here on the side, colleagues from our office, two mechanical engineers and another architect. We'll break it into two groups, each with an architect and an engineer. A lot of these spaces are very tight to get into for a group this size, so we'll do it in half. I'd also want to say be careful in some of these spaces. They have low head height. I'll warn you, and I'll try to point out the areas to see as we go through.
Okay. The meeting adjourned then, and we'll go on.